if a thought comes up saying, I'm not going to be able to do this, the key thing is not to change it to, I am going to be able to do this, but just to recognize that it's a thought and it's no more than a thought. And that as long as you don't identify with it or resist it or cling to it, it doesn't have to have any hold over you whatsoever. And it can just be a little bit of wispy noise or image that passes through like a cloud that you don't really have to pay any attention to. And the same is true of uncomfortable feelings. And so I think that ability to accept and welcome and make space for uncomfortable thoughts and feelings that are inevitable in both a performance environment, but also in any form of life, that to me is the premier skill that you can learn. You know, once you can make peace with uncomfortable feelings, they lose their power over you and you can perform irrespective of how you feel.
Welcome to the FMind podcast, hosted by me, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall. There are so many lessons to be learned in the world of trading and investing from the world of sport. And today we are talking to sports journalist, BBC radio and TV presenter, Simon Mundy, who hosts his own podcast on life lessons to be learned from sport. And he, as you heard from that clip, has some fantastic things to say about performance. First, we would like to thank our sponsorship partners, the Society of Technical Analysts at the STA. The STA, one of the world's leading bodies which specialises in the advancement and education of technical analysis. They've been going for more than 50 years and are a member-led not-for-profit body who do some brilliant work in this space, including holding conferences, holding regular meetings, and providing education and diploma programmes. We're delighted to say that as a sponsoring partner, the STA have allowed us to offer our listeners a £100 discount on the price of their fantastic home study course and home study course with diploma programme. To find out how to obtain this, go to our website, alpha-mind.net, and go to the link on how to obtain a discount on the home study course. Now, on with this week's episode.
Welcome to this week's Alpha Mind podcast, and we have Simon Mundy with us, broadcaster, event host, speaker, coach, author, used to be a member of my local tennis club, but no longer. Really delighted to have Simon on board now. He's host of a critically acclaimed podcast himself called Life Lessons from Sport and Beyond, and uses sport to explore life's bigger questions. And as a presenter for BBC TV and Radio 4's Today programme, he's interviewed some of the world's elite performers and most original thinkers too. And it's an incredible portfolio, ranging from Caitlyn Jenner right the way through to Daniel Goleman. And you'll know from many of the conversations we've had on this podcast, from a trading perspective, we've had so many people dip in and out on the topic of sports performance, on how it really relates to what's going on in the trading world. And so we're really interested to dip into Simon's huge experience and who he's talked to, what he's learned himself from his own coaching and positioning of his work with his clients. So Simon, welcome to the show, and perhaps just sort of go back in time a little bit and tell us how you sort of got into this world that you're at the moment, and what inspired you to, you know, move along into this sort of performance world?
Crikey, right. We're going to have to go a fairly long way back then. So when I was at school, fair to say I was always a bit of a gobby so-and-so. And they did one of those sort of psychometric tests that suggest a career that you could consider following. And mine came up as journalism. I was never good at maths, never good at science, but I had a reasonable command of the English language. And couple that with the fact that I grew up in a very sporty household. My dad was a rugby fanatic, still is. My mum was she's just good at any sport, anything she turns her hand to, very athletic. And so I was brought up on rugby, but then we moved near a tennis club. And I think with the nature of my brain, how it works and its propensity to go into hyper-focus, when I first hit a sweet forehand, I sort of fell hook, line and sinker for tennis. And this was in the days before Sky and the internet and all that, when CFAX was the, you know, the internet of its day. And every day I would come home and the first thing I'd do was I would check the tennis results, literally religiously. And my dad would get the Telegraph at the time, and there was a journalist called John Parsons, and I used to just read his tennis column. And I just, if anyone asked me what did I want to do at that point, the answer was always very obvious, that I wanted to to work at Wimbledon. I was never going to play at Wimbledon. So I wanted to, you know, couple that psychometric test with my passion for Wimbledon and tennis. The obvious thing was always to be a journalist at Wimbledon. Initially, probably I would have expected that to have been a written journalist when I was a teenager. But I think I prefer talking to typing. And in terms of my Wimbledon credentials, I basically remember my life by what happened at Wimbledon in any given year. So just pick a year, any year from 1970 onwards, Steve, and I'll tell you who won it and who he beat in the final.
Well, the first Wimbledon I remember was 71, so go on.
Oh, God, that's a tough one. Right, okay, I'm going to say that's John Newcombe won that one, right?
Oh, you've got me now, because I was thinking it was...
I think it was John Newcombe beat Ken Rosewall.
Right, it was around about that time. I thought it might be Sam Smith.
No, Sam Smith won in 72.
Ilie Nastase.
Yeah, that was 72. Five-set classic. And I know that because I actually gave Stan Smith the video of that because he was looking for it at Wimbledon in 2008 or 9. Anyway, listen, point being, I know like every Wimbledon winner from in the Open era and most of the scores. And did university, did broadcast journalism at university at Leeds, and then went travelling, went and lived in Australia for a year, and then came back and actually was a bit, lost a bit of focus. And I spent 3 years working for a tennis magazine, albeit sort of not necessarily what I wanted to do, which was obviously by that point broadcasting. But I started to, I used to do their appearances on, for example, Sky TV or on TalkSport, talking about whatever the topics of the day. So I went on Sky and I spoke about when they did equal prize money for men and women, which was, I think, in 2006. And then I did the same on TalkSport. And someone said, oh, you know, you're good at this. And I was like, I sort of had this light bulb moment where I thought, crikey, you know, this is what I've trained to do. Why am I not doing it? So got back into radio. I fortuitously rang a radio station in Tolworth called Radio Jackie, and which is renowned for giving people jobs and not paying them, but good for experience. So they gave me, and I just rang and they said, oh, you're in luck. Someone's leaving on a Saturday afternoon, the sports show. You can have that if you want, but we're not going to pay you. So I did that alongside my normal job for a year, which gave me then the opportunity to get back into radio, which I trained at a university when I was about 25, 26. Moved to Ipswich, did a year there. Then I got a job at Virgin Radio, as it was at the time, became Absolute Radio. And then I got a job from there. I freelanced, including for Premier League production. So I used to do pitch side reporting from the football matches and the Premier League. And then I was doing a red carpet event. What was it? It might have been the Pride of Britain Awards, and someone was there from Radio One. And long story short, I laid it on thick, got in touch with the editor. They said, we've got no jobs coming, but I harassed him, sent him Christmas cards and just like went massively overboard. And when an opportunity did arise, they said, okay, you can come in for a couple of shifts. And the stars aligned, someone left, I got the job. And then this guy who'd been the sports reporter for a decade also left that summer, and they said, look, we need someone to cover Wimbledon. Do you know anything about tennis? And I thought, well, if there's going to be one sport that I can showcase my my sort of sporting nous and knowledge, it'll be Wimbledon. So, yeah, that was 2010. I'd already done 3 years at Radio Wimbledon, by the way, including that Stan Smith encounter. And, yeah, and then I was in the BBC system, and I did Radio 1 for 8-9 years. Started doing Radio 4 Today program alongside that in about 2017. But I would say that, at the start of Radio 1, I loved it. I got to cover all the big events, Olympics, World Cups, Ashes Series, Formula 1, Wimbledon. But after a few years, I found that it was lacking something, which was that it was very fixated on results, tactics, scores, scandals, and the banal utterances of football managers. And so I wanted to dig a bit deeper, because I've always, it's that old corny line of sport is a metaphor for life, and I very much believe that. And I wanted to sort of create a podcast that explored that properly. So I pitched it to Radio 4, and they gave me, to the head of Today program, actually, and they gave me a podcast, which I initially called Don't Tell Me the Score, which is, and you can see where that name came from, because I was sick of scores and tactics and whatever else. And that was in 2018. And then in 2020, I think, because I'm writing a book based on the podcast, an opportunity came where I negotiated to take the podcast off the BBC and take full ownership of it and put it within this sort of growing business that I was doing on the side. And here I am. So from that stems all the other things that I do. But fundamentally, I would say the main things really are the podcast, talks I do off the side of that, and then the book that I'm writing, nearly finishing. It's been one hell of a long and longer journey than I expected. And then still broadcasting for Radio 4 and Wimbledon on the telly, which is where my inner child gets to run around and be excited and excitable. So that's that brings us pretty much up to date.
Fantastic. Thank you for that introduction. And we broadcast internationally. So
just for a bit of context then, for people who don't know. So Radio 1 is the biggest youth radio station in the country, and Radio 4 is the biggest radio station in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of a national institution. So great for that. Great to hear about your experiences with the book, because I was laughing at that because I've just finished writing a book myself.
And it's a torturous process at times, isn't it, Steve?
God, it just takes over your life, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah.
Yeah. I think I've said to Mark a few times, if I'd have known what was involved, I'd never have started it.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I was just editing a podcast today about someone who started their own business, and they said the same thing. They said, you know, doing a startup is like jumping out of an aeroplane and building an aeroplane on the way down. And actually, a book's not a million miles from that, you know, like you start with nothing and sort of gradually build up and fine tune and tweak and then eventually throw it out of the window for public consumption.
Yeah, yeah. How many times do you think you wrote the book over and over again?
Well, I've just submitted my third draft, and I mean they've been pretty much completely different. I've written three books and counting, and I haven't even published one yet. So, yeah, and it's not due to be out until the beginning of next year, 2024.
Oh, so we're going to have similar launch dates. Mine is January.
And well, 2024. Yeah, we'll be going toe to toe. I look forward to it, Steve. That's all right now.
So just to bring the conversation back to sort of the theme of our topic and the core of our topic and the particular audience we're talking to, which obviously are traders and people involved in the trading and investment world, although increasingly we're finding sometimes it's wives as well and girlfriends and partners of people listen because they want to get a sense of what their other halves are doing during the day that makes them come home and want to tear their hair out in the evening and makes them a miserable screw up, sort of, as so many of them say. But you know, we know there's a big overlap with the world of performance. Myself and Mark are always talking, and we've just delivered a series of workshops worldwide to a large group of traders at a very significant commodity trading firm, and we use sports analogies and metaphors and stories all the time because everyone can relate to it. And they can relate to that experience of high performance, of the pain of torture when things don't work out, the self-doubt moments that every sports person talks about. And we'd love to hear your take on, you know, performance and how that applies to life and so many areas of life from the fields you've worked in.
I mean, yeah, well, it depends where you want to start, really, because obviously there are so many aspects to it. And, you know, I've spoken to, you mentioned a few, you know, Caitlyn Jenner, who won Olympic gold as Bruce Jenner in 1976, through to, you know, Boris Becker and Johnny Wilkinson and Sam Warburton and Gary Lineker and Dame Kelly Holmes, et cetera, et cetera. So I've forgotten more than I can have remember. But I suppose one thing that I think is really important, and I think it applies to any area, not just performance and not just sport or anything. And you mentioned it there about self-doubt. And a lot of people talk, for example, about imposter syndrome, or which to me just is self-doubt. And I think using the words imposter syndrome implies that it's not normal, or that it only affects certain people, or that it's something that to be avoided. But, you know, fundamentally, I would say that uncomfortable thoughts and feelings are part and parcel of the human condition. And whether it's getting a good night's sleep through to winning a tennis match, whether it be at your local tennis club or on centre court, through to trading or any kind of business, you know, you're going to have moments where uncomfortable feelings like, or that get labeled things like anxiety or fear or worry or doubt come up, or, and obviously you get the accompanying thoughts in your mind as well. Or, this will never work. I'm going to get exposed, whatever it may be. And I think generally speaking, in my experience, there's a lot of emphasis put on what's known as positive psychology. I think it's positive psychology, which is, you know, when you have a thought saying, I'm not going to be able to do this, you challenge that and you turn it around into, I can do it. But I would suggest that you don't, that's unnecessary. And in fact, a waste of effort, because actually I think that, you know, those uncomfortable thoughts and feelings are very normal. And it's not what, the important thing is not the content of what they say. The important thing is how you relate to them. And if you, you know, there's that old thing of, in fact, I'm looking out my window now and it's quite a cloudy day. And it, there's that old analogy of it doesn't really matter whether it's a cloudy day or a clear day, or if it's raining or if it's lightning or if it's howling a gale, whatever the weather, that doesn't affect the sky. And if you think of us as the sky and the feelings and the thoughts as the weather, it doesn't actually really matter what the weather is. It doesn't matter what thoughts or feelings are going through our head, as long as we can recognize them for what they are and relate to them in the proper fashion, which is that, you know, if a thought comes up saying, I'm not going to do this, or I'm not going to be able to do this, the key thing is not to change it to, I am going to be able to do this, but just to recognize that it's a thought and it's no more than a thought. And that as long as you don't identify with it or resist it or cling to it, it doesn't have to have any hold over you whatsoever. And it can just be a little bit of wispy noise or image that passes through like a cloud that you don't really have to pay any attention to. And the same is true of uncomfortable feelings. And so I think that ability to accept and welcome and make space for uncomfortable thoughts and feelings that are inevitable in both a performance environment, but also in any form of life. But that to me is the sort of premier skill that you can learn. Because, you know, once you can make peace with uncomfortable feelings, they lose their power over you and you can perform irrespective of how you feel. So if I give I'll give you a quick example from my own life. So at London 2012, I was working for Radio One and I was in the Olympic Park for the whole 2.5 weeks. And it was Super Saturday, which was the day when Jess Ennis, Greg Rutherford and Mo Farah all won gold. So, you know, one of the great sporting days in British history. And I was asked to do a live report for Five Live, which was out of my comfort zone. And obviously when you get out of your comfort zone, which is the best place to grow, you know, everyone talks not about getting out of your comfort zone, getting into the ugly zone, as Dave Allred calls it, into the stretch zone. You know, that is where you grow. But to grow, you are going to then experience those uncomfortable thoughts and feelings more commonly. And so I was there and it was clear that the team effort was going rather well. The gold medals were coming, and it was clear that this was potentially going to be a pretty monumental British sporting day. So therefore, in my mind, it seemed like this really big deal. And about an hour before, or 45 minutes before I'm due to go live on air, I'm all kitted up. I've got the microphone. I've got the live broadcast pack. I'm surrounded by drunken Team GB revelers all buzzing. And I feel this sort of slight sense of anxiety in the pit of my stomach. And I'm like, oh, please go away. And I tried to get rid of it. And I tried to sort of shoo it away and ignore it and resist it. And all that that did was make it come on even stronger. And it sort of grew up and grew and grew in my body and then went up into my head. And I'm having all these sort of slightly catastrophic thoughts of, oh, my God, I'm going to mess this up. My career is going to go down the pan. I'll get fired. You know, and obviously you follow that all the way through to I'll end up on the street. I mean, I'm being a bit facetious, but that is kind of how things spiral. Anyway, when it came to it, the adrenaline kicked in and I got through it and it was fine, but it hadn't been an enjoyable experience. It had been, you know, afterwards there was just a sense of relief when actually it was what a privilege to be able to do something like that. and I wanted to be able to enjoy those moments. And so I got introduced to something called acceptance and commitment therapy, or acceptance commitment training, which is a very big thing in sport. There's a guy called Steve Hayes. I'm sure you probably know all about it, but there's a guy called Steve Hayes who I've interviewed. I'm putting a podcast, an episode out with him fairly soon, who came up with it. And it's all about developing psychological flexibility. And psychological flexibility is known as the superpower of well-being and mental health. And it comes down to that ability to be with whatever is in your internal experience without resistance at any given moment. And there are various sort of tools they use. A very simple one is just to notice you're having these thoughts and feelings. And you can say, for example, oh, I'm having the thought that I'm going to mess this up. Or you might notice the anxiety. And instead of being like, oh, go away, anxiety, you're like, oh, hello, welcome, come on in. And so you're stopping the resistance. And actually what happens is then you can transmute that uncomfortable thought and feeling and turn it into adrenaline, which Dave Allred, who Johnny Wilkinson's coach, would always say is fuel for a great performance. So I think, and then if I fast forward a few years, I remember doing a live TV broadcast, actually non-sport related, and I was in the wings ready to come on to do a live hit with someone who I knew liked to throw curveballs. And that same feeling arose, but rather than try and get rid of it, this time I did, oh, welcome it. Oh, hello. Welcome. Make space for it. Come on in. And it didn't overpower me at all. And in fact, you know, it sort of, I managed to channel that adrenaline into really enjoying the performance. And so I think that sort of level of acceptance and welcoming and getting comfortable with uncomfortable thoughts and feelings is probably the most effective and empowering thing anyone can learn to do. I mean, Michael Johnson, who was the fastest man of all time until Usain Bolt came and stole his crown. He used to say, you know, the thing he missed most was being in the cool room before an Olympic final or whatever. And it was the nerves. He loved the nerves. So I think being able to relish and welcome and make space for those uncomfortable feelings is so powerful, even down to the point with our little girl now. Whenever she gets a bit anxious at night, I think quite common bit of advice that people might give is, oh, ignore it, it'll go away, whatever. I'm like, no, welcome it, make space for it. And she literally now imagines she's putting on a little dinner party with uncomfortable thoughts and feelings. And I'm like, I'm so pleased that you're learning this at the age of 7. You know, I didn't learn this till I was 27. So yeah, that's a long and rambling way of saying, I think that you can't beat acceptance and welcoming uncomfortable thoughts and feelings, because once you've got that down, I think everything else falls into place. For example, you know, doing the work you know you need to do, not giving into procrastination, you know, dealing with high pressure moments, all that kind of stuff falls under that first welcoming and acceptance banner.
That's fantastic. And, you know, I think hearing you say that will really resonate with our audience. And I was taken back to a podcast we did last year with a guy called Ben Aldridge. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's an author, and he wrote a book which became the title of our podcast, Becoming Comfortable Being Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the idea of the book was that he put himself in a series of very uncomfortable situations, things he hated doing, things that made him feel awkward, some very simple ones, some quite complex and dangerous ones. And when I picked up that book and I saw the title and I thought, I've got to read it, I thought, well, that is trading. That is high performance.
Yeah.
That is a difference between, you know, those who can and those who want to but can't.
And I think that comes down to a personal choice though, doesn't it? Because it's funny you said, I think I like the sound of that book. I'll have to check it out. But I interviewed very recently a guy called Steve Magness. He's written a book that sounds very similar. It's called Do Hard Things. And actually, he was the guy who exposed Alberto Salazar, the guy who was involved in all the doping. It was massive in America, of track runners, and it was abusive and all sorts of things. And he was a young guy and he exposed it. He's written this book, Do Hard Things, which is exactly like what you say. It's leaning into where the discomfort is. But the funny thing is that there, I think two areas, for example, where you can get really uncomfortable, but that you wouldn't think of. One is to that, you know, the Blaise Pascal quote, all men's problems could be solved if they were able to sit in a quiet room on their own doing nothing, essentially. And that ability to sit and do nothing, that is the ultimate training in terms of being able to be able to manage pressure situations, because we've got so many distractions and everything these days. But no, whoever sit, you know, you wait for a train, you look up on the platform, 98% of people are on their phones. No one has to be bored now. So if you really want to do something hard, just sit in a room and do nothing for 20 minutes, literally nothing. You know, don't even, you know, if a thought comes, let it go. And that was very interesting. And hard conversations is another one.
I imagine also that's turned up as part of this, this different type of strength, these sort of soft skills that have become the powerful skills, is also a sense of presence as well, and what presence is.
I'll give you an example of something that I think is pretty profound and actually relates to what I mentioned before about welcoming uncomfortable thoughts and feelings and stuff like that. And it's to do with Johnny Wilkinson and that glorious moment when he kicked the winning drop goal back in 2003. I was in Australia at the time, one of the highlights of my life. And when he kicked that winning drop goal, he described it as being as if he wasn't there. The me that he took himself to be disappeared. And he says there was just a knowing of it. So that basically the drop goal kicked itself. And I think this is the key to really good performance is and you'd use the word presence, Mark, is that ability to get out of your own way in whatever field. And I think that involves understanding that we tend to think that happiness, peace, joy, fulfillment, all those things are something to be acquired at some point in the future when we have done, bought, won, whatever it may be, X, Y, Z. But actually, if you look at it from a sporting point of view, you know, there are so many examples of people who've won trophies, you know, the biggest tournaments in the world, and actually being left with a sense of underwhelm or even disappointment or even depression in some cases. But you know that when people actually go into that experience of being so engrossed with what they're doing that the sense of time drops away, their sense of self drops away. It's almost like the experiencer and the experience, the distance between the two collapses, and it's just things happening. That is when people really hit peak performance. But it's also an intrinsically enjoyable experience. And I could imagine, not that I know much about trading, but you know, you could probably get into that sweet spot of do it. Well, you can do it in any area of life, really. And I think the understanding is that is doing things for their own sake and the joy is not in becoming, the joy is in losing yourself in the being or in the doing in the moment. So instead of being future focused, it is being, you know, this moment, just this moment, giving my everything to this moment. And the more that you're able to do that, the more likely you are to lose yourself in the moment, at which point a joyful experience, as well as, you know, a positive outcome is more likely, although you're not doing it for the outcome. And if you think of anyone who starts doing sport, you know, the reason they do it is because they love it. And when you love something, you know, that's when the that is when the performance invariably flows from that. People talk about practicing for hours on end in their garden, kicking a ball around or kicking a ball against a brick wall, and they're not doing it to become someone. They're doing it as an expression of the love they feel for that game. And it's only later that people start thinking, "Oh no, now I've got to do this to win, because if I don't win, then I'm not enough." And you get lost in this narrative, rather than being like, "No, I'm doing this because I want to do it." And you're almost rediscovering that childlike, joyful enthusiasm and passion for something, which is presence. Which, because you're not doing it to become anything, you're doing it for the sake of doing it, and you know it is its own reward. And I think if you can get to that place, well, then you can't lose, really.
We will return to the episode in a second. We just want to let you know of a one-day conference on the 18th of April in London called Technicals to Trading Systems. This event is being run by our sponsoring partner, the Society of Technical Analysis, the STA. This is open to finance professionals working in funds, banks, prop firms, asset management firms, commodity and energy trading firms, and research shops, as well as to serious-minded retail traders and anyone interested in systematic and quantitative trading and analysis. If you're in London, the UK or Europe, this is a great opportunity to hear some great speakers and to learn from them. It is also an excellent chance to meet and network with like-minded individuals. To find out more and to register for this event, go to the STA website at technicalanalysts.com. Now back to the podcast. Yeah, it's really fascinating hearing you say that, because, you know, trading is a strange thing. A lot of people go into it, obviously, for the money rather than, you know, you don't practice as a kid against the wall when you're young. But you then realize very quickly that actually that if you focus on the money, you're always going to struggle. As you focus on the performance, you know, the money will follow.
Of course.
And I hearing some of the things you said there, I remembered some of my best trades in my career. So before I became a coach and a podcaster, I was a trader for many years, a professional trader. And there were moments where I used to enjoy it so much. I used to think, wow, and I'm getting paid to do this.
Yeah.
And you know, I used to say to myself, God, how many jobs can there be where you hate the idea of Friday coming along and you can't wait for Monday morning? And it was, you know, it was such fun in those days, and you felt completely present and connected to what you were doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, which isn't most of the time. A lot of the time it's quite painful and, you know, sort of torturous. But when you get those moments, and I've heard a lot of people talk about that, you know, everything's worth it for that one moment.
Well, I think that's what we're looking for in everything, right? Like whether it be in a relationship or, you know, playing sport. And like you said, if you can find a job where you find that, and I agree, I don't think there's any job where you're going to have that all the time. If you can find a job where you can have even glimpses of that or moments of that, then, you know, how lucky are you? And like you say, if you're getting paid a wedge of cash as well, then even better. But no, I completely agree. You know, I think, you know, if you're doing something for the outcome, then invariably the input's not going to be as good. You know, if we go the classic... I've mentioned Dave Allred a couple of times, and he's someone who does stick in my mind. So he wrote a book about pressure, dealing with pressure. And he said, look, the number one thing about pressure is focusing. It's another old cliche, focusing on the process, not the outcome. Because obviously if you're thinking, oh my God, I've got to sink this part, because if I don't, I'm going to not get X, right? Then there's a tension in your body. Whereas if you're just, you know, playing and or doing whatever you're doing and loving it for its own sake, the outcome takes care of itself, whatever you're doing, you know? So I think, you know, and you can find that in any area of life. And I think the key is to find that thing in you know, whatever you're doing. Then if you can do that, then great.
It's interesting how this sort of this flow state, you know, that one can achieve through just being in the experience of the act generates surprises. I mean, I remember some points in my sort of lopsided tennis sort of history that there are moments where you just hit return a serve, you know, do this most dramatic passing shot, and you almost guess ask the question, how did I do that? And I think Emma Raducanu did a drop shot off the baseline in the Wimbledon game.
Yeah.
But so surprised as she gets dropped her racket.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. When just before, I think it was in the quarterfinals or.
She got to the fourth round, didn't she? A couple of years ago.
It literally, it was a drop shot. She did it off the baseline at an angle, and she dropped her racket because it was such a surprise. And I think that experience in life as though we're in a different operating system, which is from the various approaches, is entirely achievable. And I often liken it sort of in terms of the aspect and perspective of life, that if you can get into that state, you suddenly realize you've been walking around in the world that's black and white and mono in 3D. And actually you suddenly just notice that it's HDMI color in 3D with sound surround.
Yeah.
And I think through that, you get a different balance in yourself. So you approach performance in a relaxed state, in a present state. And I think that's where elite performance comes from. It comes from that place. It doesn't come from pressure on yourself and pressure from others.
All of this, you know, positive thinking, forget, in my opinion, forget that. Like I don't see any, for some people that may be of value, but in my view, not. You know, I think it's funny you say that, actually, Mark, just quickly about the tennis thing. So my greatest tennis moment was, quote unquote greatest, was in 2002. So I won the Oakshott Village Sports Club men's singles, something I've been wanting to do for many years. And anyway, I don't remember much about that, except for the fact my dad was watching. Obviously, I wanted his approval. But funnily enough, what I do remember really vividly was a match I was playing about 4 weeks later against an American chap who I still can't remember. There was no one watching. And he hit this slice approach shot and he came in on my backhand. And I hit this dinked, angled backhand pass. That, again, like you say, I was like, where has that come from? Like, I didn't do that. And I think, like you say, we step out of black and white and effort and trying and all that stuff into this kind of, you know, blissful state of, it's almost like, like you're being lived. It's not that you're living. No, you're being lived. Like life is acting through you. And that's why, for me, just to get a bit controversial, when it comes to, there's all this talk, isn't there, in the men's tennis at the moment about who's the greatest player of all time, like Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. Everyone's like, oh, it's Djokovic because he's won the most titles, right? Now, statistically, you can't argue with that. But from my point of view, I think that what makes Roger Federer so special is that the kind of thing we've just spoken about, Mark, that kind of, wow, where's that come from? As far as I'm concerned, Roger has done that more times than anyone. And I think that is why he is so popular, because he's able to be so relaxed at times, not always. I think the older he got, the more edgy he became, but he can dip into that kind of transcendent place where he does a shot and you can see it on his face. He's surprised himself and he gives us a bit of a glimpse of that place within ourselves. And I think that's the beauty of sport or life is when, we're so at one with stuff that the chattering voice in the head drops away and things just unfold of their own accord. And like you say, enter into technicolor rather than black and white monochrome.
Yeah, I think that's such a good way of explaining what can be achieved by anybody. And we're not just talking about the elite, but actually anyone can achieve that. And it will make a difference to whatever you do and your relationships and
I think everyone does experience that. But we sometimes don't realize it. You know, like people talk the example of when we wake up in the morning, like that split second when you've woken up before your mind's come online, there you are. And then, you know, all the thoughts fire up, oh, I've got to do this and I've got to do that. I think we all experience this. And this is the state we all crave, even though we think we might want the money or the car or the house or whatever. We want that experience. I mean, Steve, you said it there. Like, you know, your face lit up when you were describing those trades. And Mark, you know, the same with you. And I think that's what we want. And like, it's totally achievable. In fact, everyone does experience it from time to time. It's just a question of being able to get there knowingly.
Yeah, it's a state of flow. And yeah. It's a wonderful thing when you can have it. And sometimes, I mean, often the things that get in the way is our ego, the noise inside our head, that interference, you know, almost the desire to get there gets in the way of actually getting there.
Absolutely. Well, as they say, you know, the ego is just the activity of seeking and resisting. Get rid of all of that. And, you know, it is there. Underneath the noise and the feelings and all that stuff that we take to be ourselves, but actually, like I said, it's just the weather passing through.
Yeah. But it is so hard. It's you know, I know in this world of trading that a lot of people talk about, you know, if moments, if only I hadn't, if only I, know, and usually those are ego moments. That's where the ego just interfered and got in the way and tries to take over.
That's why I think, you know, positive talk, positive thinking, or affirmations, or, you know, any of this, or self-talk even, I think is really overrated. I think, like you said, if you can relate to those thoughts and feelings as thoughts and feelings rather than getting lost in them, then that to me is a far more powerful, it's not even a technique, it's just a recognition.
But I think you said it perfectly before, though, where, you know, if you can have a process focus rather than an outcome focus, because the ego takes us to outcome. The ego wants to win. The ego is so desperate for recognition and for us to be the hero of our own stories.
Yeah.
You know, or as like you said, to want the approval of someone you hold very dear.
Yeah.
You know, and how often that gets in the way. And if we can just almost kind of just focus on the process, just have a structure, be present to the focus, to the process, and, you know, sort of work on, you know, what is my purpose here? You know, what am I actually here to achieve, and how do I do it, and how do I apply myself in that way, and how do I stay present to that?
And
you can learn those skills. And I think so many of the greats of the world, and, you know, I always go back to That brilliant Netflix series. Did you see The Last Dance?
Oh, goodness. My wife and I, it was the highlight of COVID.
It was an incredible series. But I was, you know, I think it was one of those series where I think I re-round every episode and watched it again before it finished.
Yeah. It's truly incredible, yeah.
And there was something in the very last series which really jumped out at me. And it was a comment by the sports writer, Mark Fansil, who and he said his, and he was talking about Michael Jordan, his gift was not that he could jump high, run fast, or shoot a basketball. It was that he could be completely present. And that was the differentiator.
Yeah.
And he said he didn't allow what he couldn't control to get inside his head. So he would say, why would I think about missing a shot I haven't taken yet?
Oh,
and That is incredible to be able to, because he said in that comment, he said so many other great players just don't make that extra leap to greatness because they're too worried about missing the shot.
Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful line. And to me, it just implies that, you know, every moment is fresh and new, and like letting. So I think so much performance stuff, it relates to techniques and strategies and sort of add-ons, whereas actually he's just in a perpetual state of letting go of what's happened and letting go of the past and letting, you know, and so every moment he's fresh and new and able to you know, to show up and hit peak performance, because he's not got any internal baggage, you know. He's not carrying around past, and it's that old thing of like he's forgiving himself for mistakes essentially, and just turning up fresh and anew. But and I think the fact that he was with Phil Jackson, because Phil Jackson obviously he's very zen focused, and you know, really understood the power of in fact, I think he's spoken about the true beauty of sport being exactly what we're talking about, that ability to experience that, you know, that losing yourself in the moment, that's the beauty of sport. And then if he's thinking of that, that's what I'm looking for, not the trophies. But then by looking for that, he gets the trophies. I think he's won more whatever they win over there in basketball than anyone in the history of the game. And it's not by focusing on the trophy. It's by focusing on exactly what we're talking about.
On the process, yeah. And, you know, and I think that's why people love sport. You know, I mean, I don't think you could have watched that World Cup final without getting mesmerised by Messi, who seemed to have let go. Every World Cup he's come intense and tight.
And
has underperformed.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he turns at this World Cup at 35 or 36 or whatever, just in a different place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think we all got taken along with it.
Oh, it was incredible, wasn't it? And I think that's the beauty of sport like that, is it is so transcendent, you know. It is something so magical about it, you know, to be, you're just getting taken higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. I always think back to that, you know, that Wimbledon final of 2008 between Federer and Nadal, and just being sat on the couch. I mean, it gives me goosebumps now. And just being like, how are they getting to these, you know, ever higher heights? And it is just by being so engrossed in the moment. And you know, and if there was one technique relates to this, and it's not a technique at all, but it's just a way of looking at things, is that one of my guests said is to live as if time doesn't exist. You know, so the past doesn't exist, future doesn't, all that exists is this. And then if you can really squeeze yourself into that, then, you know, then past doesn't have to hinder you, the future doesn't matter, and you are then free to you know, be inspired. And inspired means, you know, to that kind of life flowing through you. It's not you doing it. It's you're opening up to a moment of inspiration from deep within, essentially.
We'll return to the podcast shortly. Just a quick reminder about our podcast sponsorship partner, the Society of Technical Analysts, and their brilliant home study course, which is the gold standard for education on all aspects of technical analysis. The home study course is based on their outstanding STA diploma program, which is delivered annually at several leading universities. The home study course has been written and created by some of the world's most experienced technical analysis experts. As part of our partnership with the STA, we are delighted to offer a £100 discount on the full cost of the STA home study course and the STA home study course package with the diploma program. To find out more about this, go to our website alpha-mind.net, where you'll see all the information on how to obtain this discount. Now back to the podcast. You know, let's bring Mark in here, because, you know, Mark's Mr. Mindfulness.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a master of working in that space. So come on, Mark, you must have something to say about that.
Oh my God.
Just quickly, I have to say, it's a shame you guys don't put out the video, because just to say, you do look very zen-like at this very moment. I'm very relaxed and zen-like. So yeah,
as always, present and correct, sir. a couple of things. I mean, I know we talked about sports, but I remember when Sting won a Grammy and he went up on stage to grab the granny, and the first thing he said was that music is the reward.
Oh, beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. And I think there is beauty in genius as well. I mean, you know, the way that Messi's awareness of not even running, but just being consciously aware of just what was going on around him in the present moment, and that was it, was just beautiful to watch. There's a beauty to it.
No, there really is. Yeah, for me, that is. Some people get it through art, but as you just said, for me, Mark, it is sport. It's those that to me is beauty.
There's a ballet, sort of sense of ballet to it, and I think Federer has that grace.
100%.
So it's motion through ballet, and it is. There's a beauty to it, but 100%. When you were talking about presence and that state of really being sort of acknowledging thoughts, but not being sort of taken away by them into the past, future, or a disturbed present even. The sense of, or the capability of the brain to listen to thoughts and to be present, it can't do both at the same time. So you're either present or you're drifting into and getting, disturbed or distracted by thoughts that come and go. Some, 50,000 a day or whatever the number is. So I always sort of positioned the sort of argument that, attention and awareness of your current state is really, really important, but also acknowledging that tuning into your senses and your thoughts become a lot quieter.
Yeah.
But tuning into your thoughts and essentially your senses are offline.
Mm.
So, and we have that challenge, but I think the mastery of presence is for those that notice that they've been distracted and can get themselves present very, very quickly. And I think the sense of tuning into your senses in whatever you do and staying that way is where presence really shines. And of course, what you see, what you hear, what you touch, where you are, what you feel in terms of what you're walking upon. And I think that the masters of the games that we've talked about, particularly tennis, where we have so much in common, you can see it. You can see how they're staying present. The little moments when they take a break, they're taking a pause, but they're also very present when they're doing that. They're maintaining this sense of calmness and awareness to then, and I'm sure when they walk out, they're walking out connected to the space they're walking in, and they're turning up for it. I mean, it's about turning up for life in the sense of being present for what's about to happen, because it's never happened before, and not judging it. I think they just are there for the moment. And I think the moment is the only thing that's there. And I think that in the world of trading, as much as sport, too much thought goes into things at times. Things get missed, and you create your own stress, you get in your own way. You create essentially a weapon that's now attacking you.
Yeah.
And I think to be able to master that through presence, through various mechanisms and hacks, is where performance shines. And like I say, when performance does shine, that there's a beauty that shines with it. And you kind of know it when you're in it. You can sense that beauty, because it just feels a graceful place. Yeah.
But if you try and cling to it, it will disappear. That's the thing.
It's quite too hard.
You go into it. Yeah.
That's the challenge here, isn't it? Is how do you get to it? I mean, you get to it occasionally. We see it with certain players, certain sports people. I mean, Emma Raducanu, who you mentioned it, Mark, she was completely present right the way through that US Open victory. You could see every game. She was at a different level. Yeah. It was almost like it had become predestined. And then she's really struggled to be present ever since. And I'm sure, that's her big battle, is she's clearly got the ability. And a lot of people have the ability to be able to do it. I mean, you see certain players. I remember Cameron Smith at last year's British Open. That final round, he just looked different.
Yeah.
You could almost see that he was going to win it.
Yeah. I think it's funny you say that, Steve, because, again, just to come back to Roger Federer, who is, my favourite sports person that I've ever watched. I could tell, when on Centre Court they come out and they're often at the doors, particularly before the final, and you'll have the camera on them as they're waiting at the doors. And I could tell what state he was in by just looking at his face before he was coming out on court. So if you look back on YouTube, this first final against Mark Philippoussis in 2003, it was like he was, popping to the shops to get, or he was like a six-year-old boy about to meet Santa. He was just so joyful. Whereas some of the times when he faced Djokovic, you could almost see he was up in his head. And you said, Steve, that, how do we get to that place? And I think, there is so much. And I, by the way, Mark, I thought what you said was really beautiful and very eloquently put. And I think that there's so much emphasis is put on thinking in the right way. you know, you've got to think these kind of thoughts and think, again, it comes back to like think positive. And but the problem with that is, first of all, as you said, you know, with all those tens of thousands of or however many thoughts we have every day, you know, we actually don't choose them. They're just always coming up. And so for me, it's really not a question of trying to align your thoughts in the right way. It's a question of stepping back, whether that be like you say, Mark, into your senses, but really sort of getting out of the way, you know. And I don't think you can force your way into this state. It's almost a letting go into the what it is. It's a letting go into this state. That's the only way. So I think any kind of particularly thought based strategy to get there is just not going to work. Because it's like Einstein said, a problem can't be solved at the level at which it was created. If thought is the problem, thought isn't going to be the solution. You know, it's about standing back from that, whether it be witnessing it, coming into your senses, or you know, just dropping out a thought or welcoming it, whatever it may be. That's the way. It's a letting go, not a forcing into.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the work of Tim Galway at all?
I've got his tennis
Inner Game of Tennis.
Yeah, I've got the Inner Game of Tennis probably on my bookshelf, actually, right next to me. Yes, yeah, I am familiar. Yeah, voice one and voice two, isn't it? I haven't read it in a while.
Yeah, but it's that closing down the noise and just stilling the mind.
Yeah,
and allowing that. I think that's what Mark was talking about before with Emma Raducanu and that shot. It's like, where did that come from? And so it's that ability to just allow your capability to do it. It's like we know we're capable, but the thinking about it just gets in the way.
Yeah. All the great competitors, they do the training, they've done the drills, and then the really great ones are the ones who can then put that all down when they go out for the performance and let it just do its thing, right? Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Get out of the way. I'm not going to force it. I'm not going to overthink it. Get out of the way and let the body that knows what it's doing do its thing.
And sometimes at the very top level, that's the difference between, you know, the people in the top three role regularly and the people who are probably just as skilled technically, but never seem to make it past the top 50 or top 100.
I completely agree. I think it's the key in everything, really, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark?
It is the key to everything. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I love this phrase that keeps on recurring, which is life is acting through you, you know, and that state of just acceptance and not prejudging and, the Jordan-esque sort of level of presence, yet doable. It's doable, you know. It's and quite a few of the people out there, I'm sure, you know, are just not appreciating where they are at any given time because they are getting distracted. And you know, we do understand that there are people out there that are more that are in perhaps worse places than black and white worlds because things like that are happening. But yeah, I think even people that consider themselves to be, yeah, I'm on it, are still probably, there's a lot more they can do to work upon themselves. We look at sort of technology and for answers, but the smartest piece of technology we've got access to is our mind. And, you know, we can make it work for us and with us, or we can choose that it works against us. And the thought side of it is where it's really working against us and starts to attack us. And that self-doubt is the biggest trip up of performance of the lot. And
if you buy into it, I would say,
For sure. If you want to listen to it.
Yes.
It's and I remember Gabrielle Bernstein talking about thoughts that were distracting her, and she's got a great book, which I have somewhere near me called Spirit Junkie. And she talked about laughing at crazy thoughts, literally laughing at crazy thoughts. What stupid brain, what are you doing with these crazy thoughts?
I'm
back here now, get out of the way. And having that type of attitude towards them is I think, a very refreshing.
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah. So there's a guy called Russ Harris, Professor Russ Harris. He's got a couple of fantastic books. The happiness trap and the confidence gap, which is essentially the same thing what we're doing. And, you know, I often, let's say when I had those thoughts on London 2012 on Super Saturday, oh, I'm going to mess this up, blah, blah, blah. One way of dealing with them is that, oh, I'm having the thought that I'm going to mess this up, which just creates that gap. There's you and there's the thought, there's that, which, and that's growing that gap is what we're really talking about. But he often talked about other ways. Yeah. Imagining that voice as Donald Duck, or like you say, you know, having a bit of a laugh with it. And yes, I think once you can develop that relationship with it of, mm-hmm. yeah, it's like an irritating little, you know, if you've got I don't want to call her irritating, but let's just say when our little girl's in the back whinging, you know, we have a choice. I have a choice to what degree I buy into that, you know, and the same is true of the voice in the head. Yeah. You know, it doesn't, we can treat it in just the same way. It's just like a nonsensical noise.
You know, it's a fascinating conversation because the thought that's passed through my mind is we're talking about, you know, in a sense, we're talking about life lessons in sport, high performance activities, and what makes people excel at the very top, or what makes people achieve levels that they can't otherwise achieve.
Yeah.
And we haven't once talked about technical ability.
No.
And, you know, people have that in spades, and then they try and work on that more. But the ones who excel actually work on this stuff here.
Yeah.
You know, Federer, Djokovic, you know, Nadal. I mean, whichever one's the GOAT, I think they're all GOATs together. I don't know how anyone can separate them. They've all got different qualities. You know, but in any sport, those people at the very top, and you know, we see it in our world. Everyone wants the best information, the best data, the best news, new opinions, and yet what really makes a difference is the stuff we're talking about, which people don't really work on that much, but the ones who excel do work on it. You know,
I think as well, the one people who do work in it, I think often they come at it from a slight misunderstanding, which again is that kind of add on. I want to add on more thinking rather than a subtraction, which is, you know, what Mark spoke about. Coming just to something as simple as coming into your senses. You know, what can you feel right now? What can you hear? That, you know, that, how simple is that? But how powerful is that?
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about letting go, and, you know, so many people talk about the moment they finally made it. Was actually when they learned to let go of something, not when they added something on.
That is such a story I've heard time and time again, you know, is that moment of, you know, this was the one time I didn't care. Because it's that, you hear that old cliche in sport, it's who wants it more. Well, I'd say often it's not who wants it more, it's who doesn't want it more, but and is, you know, has let go. That's when, you know, that's when you're able to, the tension drains away and you're able to perform at your best.
100%.
Yes, yeah, it's the 20-foot putt I turned up to and just hit the ball.
Yeah.
Exactly. Plenty of those.
How did I do that and try and overthink it the next time and get it nowhere near? Exactly.
You know, I get a feeling we could talk about life's lessons from sport for hours, but I do think you've got a young daughter you have to pick up from.
I do. So, but listen, I just want to say it's been a real pleasure speaking to I think you're both so really fascinating to talk to, and it's lovely to speak to people who have such a clear and articulate way of appreciating and expressing what we're talking about here. It's very refreshing, you know. I think people do go down the whole techniques and tools rather than coming back to what we've spoken about. So it's been a real joy. I've really, really enjoyed chatting to you both about this most simple yet profound of things.
No, that's super kind of you. And of course, we are available for the BBC if they are interested. Lovely. Well, that's Simon. I think we're super grateful. And you've dipped into to the world of letting go and being that Steve and I see as so important for much of the work we do.
Yeah.
And it is often the part of the management of self that is just not being paid attention to. Right. So we're delighted you've brought a lot of these things to life and shared so many stories that just make it relevant. And we just hope we we've just given some people out there a glimpse as to what's possible from really committing to this type of approach to life and learning the lessons from it. So thanks for your time. And I'm sure we'll have you on again in the future because, yeah, as Steve says, we can just carry on talking forever on this.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's been a real pleasure. Time has flown. It's felt like it's been in flow, and I think that speaks volumes. So I'm very grateful to you both. It really is.
Where can people find you? If you've got your
I tune into Radio 4 on occasion, stick the telly on during Wimbledon. The podcast is Life Lessons, as you said, from Sport and Beyond. I might drop the From Sport and Beyond soon. My website is simonmundy.com, and I'm on most of the social media stuff, although I haven't been going anywhere near it thus far in 2023, but I'll be picking that up soon. And the book will be out in 2024 alongside Steve's.
Well, listen, we'll put all your links and where people can find you on the notes that accompany this episode. And of course, we'll get you back when the book comes out. You'll need a bit of publicity then. So
let's get
you back on then.
It'd be a pleasure. Well, thanks so much. And look, obviously, you know, the message you both are spreading is incredibly valuable. So keep up the good work and keep spreading the wisdom that you are, because you're obviously very in touch with it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. We would like to thank our podcast sponsorship partners, Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. You can find out more about our sponsors at our website, alpha-mind.net, or see the link in the episode description. The Society of Technical Analysts, the STA, provide world-beating technical analysis education programs. Alpha Mind podcast listeners can obtain a discount off the cost of their excellent home study course. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, we'd appreciate it if you could leave a friendly review or provide a rating for the show on whichever podcast service you use. You can find out more about us at our website, alpha-mind.net. You can follow us on Twitter at AlphaMind101 and at AlphaMind102. And you can connect with me, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall, on LinkedIn. You can also follow us and can check back over some of our past episodes on the AlphaMindPodcast.com. We wish you the best of luck in the markets. Have a good week.